Into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. I'm your co-host Corey Kinnon alongside Dalton Miller here. And again, we are continuing through our summer scouting series. So breaking it down here from top to bottom, based off of how the postseason rankings ended, we've hit Ohio State, we've hit Notre Dame, we've hit Oregon, and now we're heading on to Austin, Texas here to talk about some of these offensive players on the Longhorns who are 2026 eligible and worth talking about right now. But Dalton, how are you feeling today?
I'm a little bit tired, actually, which is weird. I went to bed early last night, got a decent amount of sleep. You know, it's 6.5-7 hours is about the max I'm getting these days, you know, deep in a bodybuilding prep. But other than that, we're almost done with it. The end is near with this. We're getting ready and moving stuff out of the apartment, which is fun and stressful, and we're ready for the next step. But I'm ready to talk about some Texas prospects, because as you said, we went through Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, and this is easily the most excited I've been watching an offense.
Yeah, so let's just hop right in here. Obviously, with the Texas offense, the place that everybody wants to start with, and the place that we might as well start with here, is Arch Manning.
Mm-hmm.
100 dropbacks last year.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot to make a huge judgment off of. Again, 100 dropbacks against UTSA, ULM, in a Mississippi State team that got completely mollywopped by Toledo last year.
Yeah, they're bad football. They were a bad football team last year.
Yes. So there isn't a lot to go off of from like an accuracy profile perspective, from like a legitimate profile of like, does he understand what he's seeing pre post snap, for multiple reasons. One, the teams they were playing, they weren't opening up the playbook for, right? Like a lot of post digs, a lot of RPOs, a lot of the same stuff with Quinn. But two, he wasn't established as the starter in that offense ever the entire season. So he doesn't have starter reps throughout the week, which really kind of limits your game plan that you can run on a Saturday. That's going to change this year. But based on what we have seen from Arch, Dalton, where are we at?
Probably QB1. Probably. I don't think he declares. And we've talked about this before. We both don't believe that he declares. But when we just look at the tools, when we look at the arm talent, when we look at the athleticism that he has, because they did bring him in intermittently for, you know, design quarterback runs and goofy, you know, wildcat stuff.
Yeah.
He's not Sellers when it comes to rushing ability, the strength that Sellers has. And even like velocity with the ball, but his arm is so loose. Like, it's just, you can tell he's a Manning man. It's just so natural. And then to have his father's athleticism instead of his uncle's athleticism is just a massive plus. And with everything that he has in his corner, there's really no reason, first of all, to declare, because money will never be an issue with the Manning family. And two, he has every single tool to succeed, whether he plays a ton of college football or doesn't. But he doesn't have to rest on the development that comes from Texas, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
He's going to get it outside of that environment and bring it into that. With all of the money that he is going to make at Texas, and all of the money that his family already has, there's absolutely no pressure for him to go. You also saw both of his uncles stay in school for a very long time. Mm-hmm. We also have mounting data that going to the NFL after a year of starting college football in the NFL at the college football level is a bad call. You are not ready. You need those reps. And so I truly don't believe he's going to go, but man, the arm talent, the fluidity in the way that he moves and operates.
Oh yeah. Like,
he legitimately has the ability to be like a Joe Burrow type guy within the pocket when it comes to the ability to skirt pressure and be that creative, you know, Tony Romo type, but with the cognitive ability of a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady with the micro movements and just kind of twitching the shoulders, getting a step away and being able to find a third. Like, he has all the tools in the toolbox. I just don't think he declares.
Yeah, I would be shocked too as well. All the stuff you mentioned, 1 year of starting is not enough.
I will say the running with him scares me because he is very lean.
He is.
And he doesn't have much play strength.
No, he's not as lean as Quinn Ewers, though, which is really funny. But yeah, tons to like. But again, from the stuff that I really want to watch from a quarterback, I just can't do it yet. Like, looking at his charting profile, I charted the 100 dropbacks, but we're talking 13 deep balls, 9 throws outside the numbers, 12 throws. Like, those aren't substantial enough numbers to do anything with at all. And that's the same can be said from a cognitive perspective for all the reasons that I said. Like, the dude wasn't the established starter at all the entire season. I don't know what kind of political games were being played with the boosters and Ewers and whatever else. But like, Arch was clearly never starting whenever Ewers was healthy. That was very clear because he should have started very early last year. So I don't have enough to go on. I want to see, and we'll see very early because we have Texas, Ohio State to open the season. So like, we will know very early what kind of guy this guy is as an established starter. But we're talking about Arch now the entire offseason to be a leader at that university and on that football program, the entire offseason to install all sorts of things that Texas could not run with Quinn Ewers at quarterback. Again, we're talking about Arch, who is a good athlete. We're talking about Arch, who has an arm that Quinn doesn't have, some things like that. Arch is probably a lot more quick-witted than Quinn is as well, but problem solving when that primary solution isn't there as well. So I think we could see I said this with Nate, and I will compare Mac Jones and Arch Manning as players cognitively and what Steve Sarkisian can do offensively, though. Mac Jones operated Sarkisian's offense the highest level of any quarterback ever has. Mac Jones played almost a perfect season in 2020. I almost kind of want to go back and watch Mac Jones and say, like, well, what was Sark asking Mac to do that he just didn't trust Quinn to do? And like, can I imagine that Arch can do some of those things with the plus athleticism that Mac never had, with the plus arm that Mac has never had? From a cognitive level, like, what did Sark put on Mac that he took away from Quinn? And will he give that back to Arch, if that makes sense?
I don't think he took it away. I think it was a lot of the same offense. Quinn just couldn't run it. Quinn didn't have the cognitive ability to be that automatic the way that Mac was. I don't think that he pared down the offense much. It was a lot of very much, this is what I'm going to give you offensively, and you're going to have to be able to process this and get the ball out. And Mac Jones did that at an incredibly high level. I think what we did see with Arch last year that we didn't see from Quinn, even in those couple of games, is way more propensity to push the ball downfield with those downfield options, and have better decision-making while he did it. But anyways, a guy we don't think is going to declare, we just talked about for 8.5 minutes. So we should probably move on to some very, very exciting offensive players who are, listen, the fun and awful thing about Texas's offense is that everybody is super young. We're not looking at a single senior this year, are we?
Maybe not. DJ Campbell's a fourth year.
Campbell's a fourth year, but he's a junior.
DJ Campbell's a senior. No, he's a senior. He's listed as
a senior. Oh, that's right. He is a senior. That's right.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Texas offense is very, very young. Very, very young, including the two running backs we're going to talk about next. Yeah. One of which didn't play at all in 2024, suffered a season-ending injury before the season even started. And the other one benefited from that quite drastically. Let's start with CJ Baxter.
Hey, let's do it.
Dude, CJ Baxter's feet are unbelievable. CJ Baxter's
vision. I have a hot take before we get anywhere. Before we go anywhere, I have a hot take. CJ Baxter could be RB1 in this class.
I can't get there.
I think he's that physically talented.
I could get there if I felt like his contact balance for his size was underwhelming. Like I saw, like,
you know what's funny?
Average contact balance for a 230-pound running back.
I said tentative at the second level.
Yeah.
Was one
and
of my
like
notes.
His pass pro needs a lot of work, was like my other big note on him. Those two things give me pause. Like Jeremiah Love is already that dude, I think. And I like he's tentative as a runner at the second level, yeah. But that dude's vision, his decisiveness, his feet.
He's 6'1", 230
as well. And he's 6'1", 230.
It's unreal.
And he runs that light footed. I do question. I didn't really see him get to the edge. I didn't really see him turn a corner. I didn't really see him explode through the second level. Those three things make me question a little bit. Like, is there a breakaway gear to him as a runner?
There is.
But the vision, man, the footwork, the creativity, backside eyes in wide zone, like, my goodness, it is so clean.
So I know when a guy is special, when he can go off foot and still swivel his hips and hit backside. Like if you're running left and you can somehow plant with your right foot and swivel and get backside, that's outrageous. To do that at 6'1", 230, that's special athleticism.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's quite like the Saquon quad father type big in the lower half, but he is still a very, very large individual. And
which makes his contact balance so disappointing. Like, I just want to see you like run through some dudes.
Well, I just think he's trying to. Well, and part of the tentativeness, I think, is he's just trying to take home run swings all the time.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to hit doubles and trying to like kind of skirt contact, but like he's trying to completely avoid contact instead of using his frame and his ability to break the tackle. He's trying to make guys look silly. And then he ends up getting caught. You know what I mean? Where yeah. Other guys, you know, even somebody like Love can just, you know, kind of bounce off and keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last thing I'll add about Baxter here too. He's an incredibly natural receiver.
Yes.
He has incredibly natural hands.
Yeah. And
as well
with him coming off of an injury, if he has a big year at running back, even though he's a redshirt sophomore, go buddy.
Yep.
Go make your money.
Let's talk about Trey Wisner now. So Trey Wisner benefited quite a bit from the Baxter injury. It honestly might have forced Jadon Blue to declare early. Like with Baxter coming back and with Wisner having
100%,
the year that he did,
100%.
Blue's like, I gotta go. Like I don't have a choice. I gotta go because I'm not.
He wouldn't have played.
No, wouldn't have played. Wisner rushed for 1,000 yards. Wisner was an absolute workhorse. He had games with 33 carries this past season. Dude, I like Trey Wisner. I like him.
What did I say to you when we first started watching him? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
I said he's Isaiah Pacheco. But
yeah, oh yeah.
He's a well curated version of Isaiah Pacheco. Like, Isaiah Pacheco is just pure chaos and violence. Mm-hmm. Trey Wisner is just all of that ball of energy wrapped up into somebody who is very, very cognizant of everything that's going on around him as well. Mm-hmm. And has the ability to maximize damn near every single rep because of it. He is the contact balance.
The earth shakes around him.
He is like 190 pounds and he runs like he's 220. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. He's got good ankle flexibility. He's fluid. He's efficient. Good hip swivel. He can bend the corner. He can peel outside. He flashes that Le'Veon Bell style of like big jump cut vision and then just exploding downhill. Mm-hmm. He catches at the first level. He sets up his eyes. He finds hallways. He's got good initial bursts. He's got a really strong first three gears. I don't think he has that long gear. Mm-hmm. But for me, he's somebody who, and I think I talked about this when I talked about another back in this class. I can't remember who it was. But, you know, if you have those first three gears and you can consistently hit doubles, I'm pretty happy with that. You don't need to always be able to go 70 yards. But if you can turn a 5-yard run into a 15-yard run, that's still a very big explosive play that's helping this offense greatly. When it comes to kind of the weaknesses that I saw from him, it was that long speed. And the other thing is, when things were going well, he was a monster. But when the offensive line wasn't giving him gigantic holes to run through, and they were giving him the ball 20 to 30 times, he had a tendency to get a bit quick with his brain and his feet, mm-hmm. and get a little bit off balance. There were a couple of times where he just caught the rug a little bit. And there were times where he tried just a little bit too hard at the first level to make something happen later in games when things were already not going very well. Instead of just trying to maximize that rep, he was trying and getting frustrated with not being able to maximize the reps that he had beforehand. So I think being a little bit more patient when things aren't going his way, which will happen a lot more at the NFL level, will be important. But I think overall, this is a really, really fun running back that I think you take in round three. And he can be a very, very heavy contributor in your offense for that rookie contract.
Yeah. Some of the negatives that I wrote down were, I thought his pacing could have been better, like that initial pacing. Cause again, it's the Pacheco Ian, the Pachecan, like Pachecan. He takes a handoff and like the ground is shaking immediately. So like he goes 0 to 100, he goes 0 to 100 pretty quick. But it's like, just take a beat. Like, let's pace out a little bit here. Stay a little light on your feet and then find a lane and go. Let a lane develop and go. And then, yeah, the creativity, once he does get the second level, creativity, even trying sometimes to find that first level hole, kind of lacking, because I think the patience is like, if I don't have the hole, then I'm just going to make a hole to some mm-hmm. extent. Where it's like, all right, time to put my head down and just like churn out 3 yards. And in terms of wide zone eyes, though, like he sees backside really well when it's there. And yeah, dude, he runs with like such a natural low center of gravity. Like I would hate to hit him. Like I would just hate to try to tackle him. Fun player.
Yeah, I've talked about this before, but there's just like an inertia that he brings with him. Mm-hmm. From that size, where he is just able to concentrate so much violence in that final drive of his foot before contact. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. We had a running back who was a sophomore when I was a senior in high school, who was a smaller guy than our starter. But he just had that ability to, right before contact, draw all of his power in and like hit the nose button as he was about to contact you and just blow you off your feet. This dude was like 155 pounds. And he just found that raw explosiveness in that final step to just absolutely destroy your chest. And that's something that Wisner does very, very well.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to tight end here. We are going to talk about a guy that I've seen a lot of. Again, because I've spent a lot of time watching Fernando Mendoza. Tight end Jack Andrews transferred from Cal in the spring window, actually. In the spring window from Cal to Texas. He's going to catch... He's going to see 100 targets. How many targets does Gunnar Helm have last year? Let me pull up that PFF number real fast. And this is with Quinn Ewers. And now we're talking about Arch Manning. I just need to see how many targets Gunnar Helm had.
Probably at 60. If I had to guess.
73. Andrews might see 100 targets this next season.
Why? They're going to actually be able to throw to the wide receivers this year.
That's fair. That's fair. I think the ways that Andrews won at Cal are going to create such problems because he's going to be playing with so much space because of the receivers that he's going to be playing with. I think he's going to have a ton of space to work with. And he's a much better athlete than Gunnar Helm.
He'll definitely have a ton of space to work with. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Andrews can fly after the catch, man. Relative to tight ends, I should say. Relative to tight ends, that dude can go after the catch. My issue with Jack Andrews is that like 70% of his targets were RPO hitches. Or like screen and go, like manufactured wide open wheel routes. Like that's my biggest issue is like he doesn't have a route tree at all because it's all RPO hitch. It's all screen and go wheels. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it in that offense last year. But
that's why I'm sitting here like biting my tongue as you're talking. You're talking about this guy and I'm just like, oh, he was never covered. Cal.
On 61%. On 61 targets, he had a 92% catch rate because
he was always wide open.
Yes, and he played with a really good quarterback. But again, he should always be open, and he's playing with a really good quarterback this year.
Yeah, so let me talk about some things that you didn't talk about at all. Because of the Cal offense, because of the way that that offense was run, he blocked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. And he is a very impressive blocker in the open field. They ran a ton of screens in the California offense. He was used in motion a ton. You know, as like a sniffer, a very high accuracy rate as a blocker as well, which I like to see. He wasn't afraid to use his body at the line of scrimmage. And for a smaller tight end, you know, kind of more of a move tight end, that's kind of what you want to see from those guys. The things that I didn't love as much, all of the gimme production, of his production. Corey already talked about that, so I don't have to talk about it anymore. I thought that on like more traditional route running that I saw underwhelming the size relative separation quickness from him. I thought that in contested situations and just overall, his play strength is not very good. There was like no contact balance at all with him. Tripped up very easily. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have a lot of density to his frame. So I don't think he's super dangerous after the catch outside of the athleticism that he has. And he is a good athlete. But I just think overall, when I'm looking at a tight end, I need to see somebody like Loveland who is going to separate. Like he is a wide receiver in a tight end's body. Andrews is more like an athlete that plays tight end, but I don't really see a wide receiver yet because partially because of the offense that he played in, and you just didn't get as many of those opportunities. But overall, I just think that there is a lot that I need to see from him before I'm ready to say that he's a, you know, top 100-ish player in an NFL draft class, just because I need to see it first. Also, still an underclassman, tight end, probably not going to declare because we never see tight ends declare until they're seniors.
Yeah, he's a 4 junior this year. Yeah. We'll see what happens here, because to me, I feel like he could become like one of those Jonnu Smith-ish tight ends at the NFL level.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
What he's going to be asked to... So what's hard, though, is what he's going to be asked to do at Texas is honestly vastly different, like almost completely different role-wise. If you watch what Gunnar Helm did at Texas last year, the routes that he was running, I mean, he's running alert posts, he's running deep outs, he's running corner routes. Andres can run the routes, but it's hard. So what I'm saying is hard to project a role of like, what, well, who is this guy at the NFL level then? Because like his role is going to be completely different. But I like him. Again, what he can do in the linear plane after the catch is really nice. I think his hands are A+. Again, not a lot of play strength in terms of contact balance after the catch, but I thought when he was catching through contact, his hands were still really good.
Yeah, you saw more of him than I did, but there were a couple in the NC State and Pitt games where I thought that he should have finished and he didn't.
Mm. Okay. Okay. A little disagreement there. It's always good when we disagree. But I think he's going to be an asset to that Texas offense. For sure. Right now, I would probably say like he's a late day two, early day three kind of guy. That's kind of where I've got him graded out as.
You do have him as a top 100 guy.
Fringe top 100, yeah.
Oh, late day two, early day three. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
Two guys I don't think we'll disagree on. Let's talk about DJ Campbell, and then let's talk about Trevor Goosby.
Yeah. Let's go first.
Let's go inside out.
Okay.
DJ Campbell is, and I said this before watching Trevor Goosby, I said DJ Campbell was probably the best offensive lineman on Texas's roster last year. I think he was. And then I watched Trevor Goosby, and then I was like, man, he only played 3 games. This dude is a monster. But let's get into Campbell. He is a trash can full of dirt in pass pro. Outrageous natural anchor. He's so thick. Mm-hmm. He's got impressive flexibility when he's compromised. He looks for work. He's got impressive knee bend. He gathers really well heading into space as a blocker. He's got vice grips for hands, awareness, comfort level. He lets defenders wash themselves out of plays. He's got lovely balance. I wrote that again. Very impressive hip fluidity and swivel. He reacquires really well when moving laterally. I just think overall, it's a bit of the Booker talk from this year. He's just maybe an average athlete.
Also, Booker.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, he reminds me a lot of Booker in a lot of ways. I think he might even be better than Booker. But overall, I think that, yeah, dude, you didn't like DJ Campbell?
I did not like DJ Campbell.
At all?
I did not like DJ. He's a standard day 3 guard to me.
What games did you watch?
Ohio State, Georgia, Texas A&M.
Okay, I watched Michigan, Clemson, and another game. I can't remember which one it was. We watched completely different games.
I watched Clemson because Peter Woods, and yeah, I watched Clemson. Ohio State, Clemson, and Texas A&M were the 3 games I watched.
I thought he was awesome. I thought DJ Campbell was awesome.
Mm.
Talk about it.
Our notes are opposite on this one.
You didn't like him. What am I missing?
I thought he was on the ground a ton. I thought his weight sat out over his hips a lot. I thought his foot speed was very bad. like very sluggish foot speed.
Oh yeah, we're on completely. Ladies and gentlemen,
the fundamentals of his feet. Like
this is the first time. Okay, because me and Corey disagree enough, but we very, very rarely disagree on like biomechanically, like how guys move and their athleticism in general. This is a complete.
Yeah, I thought he was stiff when redirecting. I thought like as a run blocker when he was asked to get laterally, like he really struggled to cross face and scoop out. I thought he was a little slow to get the spot when he was pulling and climbing to the second level. We're seeing DJ Campbell pretty different. I will say the things that I did see, he's got he's 6 foot, probably 6'2", it's like 320. He's listed at 6'3", he's probably 6'2", 320. So like a very natural anchor, strong as an ox, vice grips for hands. I did see all of that, like continues to look for work. Thought he threw a little early. He throws his hands a little early. I thought so. But that anchor really came out a lot when he was jump setting, in my opinion. So like when he was forced to kind of set and he wasn't engaged right off the snap, or he was forced to redirect, I thought it could get really ugly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is going to be a really interesting one,
like,
to follow.
I think he's very firmly like a day.
This is the first time we've really like this far disagreed on a player. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Very, very, this is fun. This is fun for me. This is the first time. Okay, so we actually disagreed there. Let's talk about somebody I don't think we'll disagree about at all, Trevor Goosby. I'm going to let you start with this, and then I'm going to go.
Yeah. Goosby, man. You could tell he's 6'7". Like, I'm going to start it off by saying that. And
With your heightism.
What I mean by that is, like, when he is forced with bend, that outside shoulder, I can see, like, it strains his outside shoulder a little bit. But at 6'7", that foot speed is tremendous. Tremendous redirect at 6'7". His punch timing, yeah, still a little raw, still a little off, and I think that kind of throws him out in front of his hips, or in front of his waist a little bit. He doesn't have massive balance issues, but I think throwing hands early does, like, he commits his weight a little bit over the top a little bit. Vice grips at, like, we say, like, vice grips for hands, like when we talk about grip strength, that dude is locked down. Like, if he gets his hands again, 6'7", that means the dude's probably got some massive freaking hands as well, and it looks like it on tape, like, because he will latch and good luck from there. I didn't think it was an extraordinary people mover in the run game, but as far as pass pro goes, dude, like, very solid outside of some issues I saw, like perhaps in his knee bend, trying to match kind of those guys who bend off the edge a little bit. But at 6'7", I thought, like, well, you would expect that guy to have some natural leverage issues. And I didn't feel like he got beat through the chest at all. Either. So like, that's tremendous. We're talking about a guy who started at both right tackle, left tackle. And I text you to this. I thought he looked considerably more comfortable at left tackle than he did at right tackle. He's going to start at left tackle this year. When he did start for Cam at right tackle, it was like, oh, this is a little clunkier. The left tackle stuff was a lot more smooth. You can tell that's his natural kick, is kicking from left tackle. But he's a smooth, fluid athlete at that size. Very smooth, fluid athlete. A little stiffness in the knees and the hips, but he's 6'7". So some of that's to be expected a little bit.
I think there's a chance he goes top five. I think he's that good. I think we're talking about a Joe Alt type of 6'8" guy when it comes to his athleticism. I type in all caps to really emphasize things in scouting reports. And the two things that I all capsed, very conspicuous grip strength, mm-hmm. grown man strength. This is as a, what, he was a redshirt freshman last year? He's redshirt sophomore this year, I think.
Yeah.
At 6'7", I saw him on a play against Texas A&M in the run game get yanked and tossed by Stewart and still keep his feet and then fight back. He got he got absolutely humped to the inside and kept his feet. I don't know how he did it. And at 6'7", like, that type of flexibility is outrageous. Super impressive performance against the Aggies. And that was in relief. He didn't start that game.
Yeah.
He came in and just had to play against two guys that we thought were going to go round one. He was not overwhelmed in the slightest by either of those guys. He has wonderful lateral explosiveness. And even though I do think that there were more issues, the only real issues that I saw with him were on that outside track. He has the explosiveness and the length to just ride guys out of the pocket. And if you have a quarterback who's not going to float, there's not going to be any issues whatsoever with him protecting the arc. The hip swivel is outrageous when he's on the move. The only real like thing that I saw from him that I would like to like really see him improve is his awareness in space, the screen game. He kind of just like was out there floating around. But I think when you look at the sheer athleticism that this young man possesses, along with the length and grip strength that he has, like, technically, I thought he was pretty good already. If he really improves and shows any dominance in the run game, and he'll get the opportunity because Texas is going to run the ball 40 times a game. We are talking about somebody who is going to go top five in this class, I think. He's that special of an athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think he's like, so I'm trying to compare him to like another.
I think Alt's the only way to go.
I think I was thinking more Charles Cross, but Charles Cross was a tremendous athlete for that size. I don't think Goosby's a Charles Cross. I don't think he's a Joe Alt.
I don't think Cross like was that tall either. Though.
I think he was like 6'6".
Is he?
Maybe not. But he's got the grip strength of Charles Cross. Like, that was Charles Cross's calling card, was his core strength was tremendous. He's 6'5". So,
yeah.
Okay. Is that Charles Cross's core strength is tremendous and his grip strength is tremendous and his hand placement was tremendous. Like, that's how he won. I think Goosby can clean the hands up a little bit. I thought he got wide a little bit. Again, punched early quite a bit. But when he was locked in and he got his hands right, my goodness, dude. My goodness. There's a lot to love. I'm really excited. Really excited to see what the season holds for Goosby, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, for this offense in general, because this is a team where, oh my God, all these guys can go back. Mm-hmm. And if they do all go back, and then next year we're talking about these guys, and then we're also going to be talking about the younger guys on this offense as well. Like, we can't even talk about Ryan Wingo.
We could have talked about DeAndre Moore Jr. a little bit, but like, he's the only draft eligible wide receiver in that whole room.
And we're talking about a team that could. We're talking about a team that with a year two of Arch Manning as a starter, and all of these guys returning for a run. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a team that could average like 50 plus points a game in the SEC.
Yeah,
with this amount of talent and continuity, that's asinine.
It is.
It could be a remake of the 2021 LSU offense.
Yeah.
Or was that
2019 LSU offense.
Oh my God, it was that long ago?
It was 2019. Yeah.
Oh my God, it was that long ago.
Yeah. Or the 2020 Bama offense followed them up too. It's like, yeah, the 2019 LSU offense broke every record, and then Bama came back through 2020. It's like, well, we'll reset everything, and then they did. So your Devontae Smith won the Heisman. But yeah, they've got a lot of really young talent on that.
And you can tell because we talked for 40 minutes today.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We did indeed. I don't have anything else to talk about though, man. I think we went on.
We did. I love you guys. It's time for me to hit a week full workout because it's peak week and I'm not like really working out, but just kind of going in and getting a pump.
Love it. And I'm going to go to bed.
Go to bed.
I'm going to go to bed. So until next time, we'll be back tomorrow talking about the Texas defense. But until then, we will see you later. This has been another episode of the Dapped on Draft Podcast.